Now, agency relationship and broker responsibilities. When you say the phrase agency relationship, that's a little redundant because the word agency means relationship. It says, like every other profession, real estate is governed by a body of laws and customs which determine its professional standards and the way in which its members may do business. Although the basic legal principles pertaining to the real estate business are the same throughout the country, each state has its own particular laws which regulate the profession. Now, in the second, it says, agency is defined as that condition which legally exists. So you don't have a choice about this relationship. The law imposes it upon you. Legally exists when a principal. Now, another word for principal is client. They both mean the same thing, car, automobile. Contracts, and we learned yesterday that there are three ways to create a contract. You can create a contract expressly by using words, and that contract can be oral or in writing. And the third way is by your conduct. You don't use words, but if you use words, it's called an express contract, either spoken or written, with an agent to perform on his behalf. It is the broker's function to bring together buyers and sellers in order to negotiate a property transaction. That is the function of any broker, is to bring people together. If you have a lumber broker, a mortgage broker, a stock broker, if you call your stock broker, he's not going to sell you his stock. He's going to find somebody that wants to sell stock and you want to buy it. He puts it together as a middleman. Now, there's a great deal of difference between a mortgage broker and a mortgage banker. If you go down to the bank down here, they will lend you their customers' money. But if you go to a mortgage broker, they have no money. So they find what they call investors, and they want to lend money out, and they lend it to you, and the broker makes a fee off the top. If you go to OFI, Office of Financial Institutions, website, it'll have on one side non-depository lenders. That means these people don't have any deposits. On the other side, it'll say depository lenders. Those are banks. Now, in reality, banks act like mortgage brokers because what they do is after the loan is made and you're leaving the front door going, bye, thank you, thank you, they just ran out the back and sold your mortgage and your file to Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Jenny Mae, somebody. So they're really a middleman, too. In order to be a mortgage broker, you have to have a license now. You have to go to school, you have to take a test and things like that. So the mortgage broker is a middleman, just like a real estate broker is a middleman. So the broker's function is to bring together. The broker acts on the principal's behalf to buy, sell, exchange, rent, appraise, auction, or lease real estate. So in the state of Louisiana, if you are a property manager, you have to have a broker's license because you are receiving a fee from the public for managing that property. Now, where people get confused is they see people all the time without a license managing apartment buildings and things like that. But the property manager must have a broker's license because he's receiving a fee from the public for managing that property. But the property manager can hire employees to act on their behalf and help them manage the property that can be unlicensed. Client versus customer. That is a great deal of difference between the two. A client is one who engages the professional advice and services of a licensee. Now remember, a licensee is anybody with a license. It could be a broker, it could be a salesperson. It's a collective term, meaning anybody with a license, as his agent. A customer is a person who is not being represented by a licensee, but for whom the licensee is performing ministerial acts. Now, the definition of ministerial acts is when you're doing something for somebody to put that deal together, but you don't represent them. A licensee may assist a customer by performing ministerial acts. Performing ministerial acts does not violate the brokerage agreement with the client. Ministerial acts do not form a brokerage agreement with the customer. Ministerial acts are those acts that a licensee may perform for a person that are informative in nature. Now, some examples of ministerial acts, but they're not limited just to these. Responding to phone inquiries. If you call up an agent and you talk to them over the phone, that doesn't make that person your agent. responding to phone inquiries by person as to the availability and pricing of brokerage services, inquiries from a person concerning the price or location of the property, conducting an open house. An open house, you don't have to give all the forms and things like that, and you don't have to have people sign all those forms and things like that because nobody'd go to an open house. Conducting an open house and responding to questions about the property from a person, that's a ministerial act. Setting an appointment to view property, responding to questions from persons walking into your office, accompanying an appraiser, inspector, contractor, or other similar third parties on a visit to the property. Describing a property or the property's condition in response to a person's inquiry. Completing business or factual information for a person represented by another licensee on an offer. So if you were a new agent and you brought an offer in and a more seasoned agent helped you fill out that purchase agreement, that's a ministerial act by the older agent. Does that make sense? And they're just helping you. Showing a person through a property being sold by an owner on his or her own behalf, or if you refer someone to another broker. Now, showing a person through a property being sold by an owner on his or her own behalf. So if I'm riding down the street and I have the buyer in the car, in Louisiana, it is so simple. You represent the person you're with. If you show property to a buyer, the buyer is your client. If you have it listed, that seller is your client. Now, that is just as simple as it can be. You love the one you're with, okay? If you are working with a buyer, then the buyer is your client. If you list a piece of property, and we were all in the same firm, you are the only person in this company that represents the seller that you're listing. Does that make sense? All right. But yesterday we learned this. Who is the listing agreement between? The owners and whom? The broker, exactly right. And the broker is promising that owner two things. One, that they will designate an agent for that owner. That's why Louisiana is called a designated agency state. So the broker designates you as the agent for that owner. And the second thing the broker is doing is promising that they will market the property for you. So their designated agent is you, and the broker designates you. Could the broker designate more than one person? Sure. If Donna had it listed, but Donna was working with another person, they were kind of like a team, then the broker could designate Donna and the other person on her team, both representing that owner. If Donna's going out of town on vacation, then the broker could designate another agent while she's gone to represent that seller. So that's why Louisiana's called a designated agency state, and you will see that phrase again, I promise you. The broker is designating you as the agent and also promising to market the property, because that's the only person that can market the property. Now, showing a person through a property being sold by an owner. If I'm driving around with my buyer, my client, my principal in my car, and I see a for sale by owner, and my buyer says, I really like the looks of that house, I can go up and knock on that door. The owner comes to the door and I say, I'm Burke Baker with ABC Realty, and my client in the car is interested in seeing your house. If they buy it, will you honor my commission? Will you pay me a commission if they say yes? And we'll get to putting that in writing a little later. So I can show that buyer, my client, my principal through that house, not represent the seller, only perform ministerial acts for the seller, but still be paid by the seller. Now, back in the day, if you received money, and it's still this way in a lot of states, if you received money from someone, you had to represent those people. Whoever paid you in the deal, that's who you represented. But a few years ago, Louisiana changed our law, and our law now says compensation does not equal representation. So it doesn't matter who's paying you in Louisiana, it matters who you're with, true? So just because you're being paid by that for sale by owner, that seller, you don't have to represent him. Your client is whom? The buyer, exactly right, okay? So then, I can be paid by the seller, perform ministerial acts for the seller, and still represent the buyer. Now, at the bottom of the page, it says agent, the individual who authorized and consents to represent the interest of another person. The sales associate is a representative of the sponsoring broker. The broker shares the responsibility to the client with the sales agent. Now, if you have it listed, is the seller your client? Yes. If you show the property, is the buyer your client? Yes. Now, if you show your own listing, do you represent both buyer and seller in the same transaction? Yes. But you cannot do that unless you have written, informed consent from both buyer and seller. That is called a dual agency. If you are a dual agent, then you represent both buyer and seller in the same transaction. But in order to do that, you have to have written permission. So the buyer and the seller have to sign a dual agency form before you can represent both buyer and the seller in the same transaction. Now think about that. If you're representing the buyer, is the buyer trying to get that house as cheaply as possible? Sure. And is the seller trying to get as much money as possible? So you're representing. So we use this term loosely in this situation. Are you representing two people going in opposite directions? Yes. That's why a lot of people say a dual agency is a little scary and it has a lot of liability. If it is done correctly, it has hardly any liability. Now, we asked the other day, who in here has gotten a divorce? That is called a non-contested divorce, true? Okay. Who did that attorney represent? Tom? Neither one of them. The reason it's $495 is because that attorney, according to the canons, I promise you, said to Donna and her ex-husband is, y'all tell me who's going to get what, and I'll do the paperwork for you. Because I'm not here to get you more of the pie than him. I'm not on anybody's side. I'm here to do the paperwork. So that's kind of like what a dual agency is. It's getting a divorce with one attorney, okay? If I'm a dual agent, I cannot tell the buyer what to offer. I cannot tell the seller what to accept. I can give both of them comps to show them what is a fair price in that neighborhood. In fact, I have to. So I show the buyer two or three comps showing what property is selling for in that area at this time in that market. And I show those same comps to the seller. So the buyer will know what a fair offer to make and the seller will know what a fair offer to accept. So as a dual agent, does it have to be in writing to be a dual agent, an agency? Yes. Now, I know I have a speech impediment, but I'm going to emphasize these words because you're going to see them again in this vein. If I represent both buyer and seller in the same transaction, I am a dual agent. True? Now, let's go back and let's have the same question and change one word in it. You're going to have a completely different answer. If I represent both buyer and seller in the same transaction, I am in a dual agency, and you're going to have them both to choose from, dual agent and dual agency. So if the question said, as an agent, I represent both buyer and the seller in the same transaction, I am a dual agent. If I represent both buyer and the seller in the same transaction, I am in a dual, one is a relationship, one is a person, true? That's why we have to learn how to read and look at every word in that question. Because one word in that question can change the answer. You are a, or you are in a. Does everybody see the difference there? Agent and agency. Okay? Which one's the relationship? Agency. Now, subagent. A subagent is an agent for another agent. Actually, you're a subagent of your broker. Principal, that's the person that you owe fiduciary duties to. A sub-agent is under another agent. But whoever anybody represents is the principal, true? And what's another word for principal? client. Exactly right. What irritates me is when I go, not that I go anymore, to the barber shop. I don't go anymore. I just trim both of them myself. Okay. They were used to refer to their customers as clients. That's not true. A client is somebody that you owe fiduciary duties to. Obedience, loyalty, disclosure, confidentiality, accounting, and reasonable care. That guy at the girl at the barbershop or the beauty salon, whatever, they don't owe me fiduciary duties. They're going to talk about my bald spot as soon as I leave, okay? So they have no confidentiality, okay? Now, this is important. Agency is the relationship. Client and principal is the person. Now, cooperating broker, we have to get this straight. Now, who does the selling broker represent, the buyer or the seller? Okay, if you're running in a race and you pass the guy in second place, what place are you in? All right, let's see it. Now, what sent us down this path was the word selling. Now, look at the word selling. It has nothing to do with the seller. The agent that is selling the property represents whom? The buyer. So, Charles has the property listed. Charles's client is the seller, true? I am selling the property, true? Then who's my client have to be? That's right, it has to be the buyer. Does everybody follow that? Now that's going to be there, and most people miss that because they say, the selling broker. Well, the one selling the property has got to be with the buyer because he's doing it, true? All right, you have the property listed, true? You have your sign in the front yard. Your owner of that house, that seller, has signed a listing agreement, true? That listing agreement is an employment contract, true? That contract is between the owners of that property and your sponsoring broker, true? And your sponsoring broker has designated you to represent the seller, true? And that's why Louisiana is called a designated agency state, true? So you're representing the seller. Now, I come along and I show the house. I'm with a different firm, or I could be with your firm. I could be by myself. I don't care. I'm not you. So I show the house. And the buyer says, I really like this house. Write up the purchase agreement because I want to buy it. So am I selling the house? I'm selling it. You're not selling it. You don't fill out the purchase agreement, true? You have it listed, true? So I fill out the purchase agreement with my buyer. So I'm representing the buyer. And I'm selling the house, true? Selling is action. It ain't got nothing to do with a seller. We have this house you have listed. You got your sign out in the front yard. You're waiting for somebody to come along and want to buy it, true? So you're sitting there. Well, you didn't find anybody to buy it. I did. So you didn't sell it. I sold it. So I'm the selling agent. Everybody agree? Okay. God, I shouldn't bring this up, but another phrase for selling agent is cooperating broker or cooperating agent. Am I cooperating with Haley to perfect that sale? I am. I cooperated with Haley. Haley is the listing agent. I'm the selling agent. So did we cooperate together to perfect that sale? Okay. So the cooperating broker represents whom? The buyer. The selling agent represents whom? The buyer. The listing agent represents whom? That's right. We got it? Now, Charles had a good question. If you have it listed, Haley has it listed, we know that Haley represents the seller, true? But if someone called Haley and said, I want to buy that house. Now, is she a dual agent now? Yes, she is. Does she have to get the buyer to sign a dual agency form before she acts as a dual agent? Yes. Is she now the selling agent and the listing agent and the dual agent? You got it. Is another phrase for selling agent cooperating agent? Okay, good. Now, non-agent. A non-agent is an agent that doesn't represent you. A non-agent, someone who assists the buyer and the seller as landlord and tenant in a transaction without representing either party, also known as a facilitator. A broker sometimes considered a non-agent when assisting a customer. In some states, they started doing that, where they just put the deal together without representing anyone, hoping that they would lessen their liability. But they found out what they lessened were their fees. So most states have gone back now to representing people, not be facilitators or non-transactional brokers. An agent works for a client giving advice and with a customer giving only information. Now this is important. The law of agency, or the law of relationships. The law of agency is the law that governs the relationship between you and your broker, you and the buyer, you and the seller. The law of agency governs the relationship between you and your priest. Whatever you say in confession, is that confidential? Yeah. You don't see priests writing books, Secrets I've Heard Behind the Curtain. Okay. I mean, I'd read it, but okay. Is there a fiduciary relationship between you and your physician? Yeah. You don't see them at parties saying, "Oh my God, get away from Donna. You'll never guess what I treated her for this morning." Okay. That's illegal, true. Is there one between you and your banker? Yes, there is. Is there also one between you and the seller if that house is listed? Yes. Is there one between you and the buyer if you're showing on property? Yes. Now, there are three relationships that you can create: universal, general, and special. They're real easy. Universal, the way I remember it, is Universal Studios. Before the movie starts, the earth rotates and comes toward the screen. If I have a universal agency or universal relationship with you, I can do anything in the universe for you. I am you legally and all legal matters. But that's pretty serious. I can take deposits, I can sign contracts, I can do whatever you can do legally. So that takes a power of attorney to create a universal agency. A general is less than that. I can't be you in all matters, just a range of matters. If I was going to manage your apartment building, I would want a general agency. I would want to be you to call the air conditioner man and have the air conditioner fixed and obligate you to the debt. I'd want to be able to sign leases, evict people, take deposits. If a tree fell down in the parking lot, I don't want to have to track you down. I just want to call the tree people, have it cut up, carried off, and you get the bill. But once I leave that apartment building, I can't be you. So that's a general. But the one that we participate in most often is special, where I can do one thing for you: find your house or sell your house. Now, creation of a contract. We talked about that yesterday and this morning. How many ways are there to create a contract? Three. Well, kind of right. The law books say two: express and implied. But how many ways are there under express? Two. If you use words, that's express. Spoken or written, then you have your conduct called implied. The same three ways you can create a relationship. Can you create an oral relationship? One in writing. When you were engaged, Haley, are you married?
I am.
Okay. When you were engaged, was that an oral relationship he proposed? But then when you got married, that was in writing, true? Okay. Could you have a relationship that's implied, just living together as man and wife? Sure. So you can create a relationship the same three ways as you can a contract. Would everybody agree? Now, we learned yesterday, will death terminate a contract? Generally speaking, it will not. Will death terminate a relationship? Oh, please say yes. Okay. I'll give you a little hint. If it doesn't, that's a felony. Okay. She dies, she can't go on a date. That's all it is. I don't care what you got tickets to. Okay, express and imply. So death will terminate a relationship. But here's the kicker. When you have a fiduciary relationship, now what we used in this book, and I've been using for a long time, there are two or three, OLCAR. That's an acronym for the six fiduciary duties. So when you have a relationship and you represent someone, do you owe them OLCAR? Obedience, loyalty, disclosure, confidentiality, accounting, and reasonable care? So OLCAR is an acronym for the six fiduciary duties. If I am showing Haley property and she finally buys a house, our relationship is over, true? By performance. But two fiduciary duties outlive the relationship, and they go forever. Confidentiality and accounting. I have to keep up with all monies till the end of time. And I have to keep confidential anything I learn during that relationship. So those two fiduciary duties will outlive the relationship. Now we have to know that. I have $1,841 and some odd cents right now in an escrow account that belongs to somebody else that's been in there nearly 2 years. I sold a house at the Country Club of Louisiana. And the buyer gave me the power of attorney to close for him. So he wasn't even at the closing. And so when I gave him the offer on the property, you know, 45, 60 days before that, they wanted three things fixed in the house. Now, people are always going after they do the inspection and things, they're going to say, we want these things done. You don't have to fix them. You don't have to fix those, but they don't have to buy the house either, true, okay? And so I showed him the three things they wanted fixed. He said, Burke, I didn't even fix them for me. You know, why would I fix them for him? I said, well, if you don't, they're probably not going to buy the house. And the three things came to what we estimated around $10,000. And I said, well, let's do this. At the closing, let's just withhold the $10,000 and give it to the closing attorney and let the buyer fix those things himself. Because I promise you, if we fix them, we're not going to fix them to their satisfaction. Never happens, okay? Second, if this deal falls through and they don't buy the house, you will have fixed three things that didn't matter to you and you're out $10,000. So after closing, we'll just leave $10,000. That's exactly what happened. I went to the thing, we gave the $10,000 to the closing attorney. 4 or 5 months later, the buyer's bringing in the three receipts and there were didn't quite come to $10,000, there was $1,800-something left over. Now, that belongs to that seller, true? Well, he's out of the country, he was in the North Sea or the Black Sea, somewhere. And so I emailed him, I heard back from him a month later, and he says, I'll let you know when I get to repairing. $1,840-something to him is like a nickel to us, okay? So he doesn't care, it's no big deal. And so I've only heard from him once or twice, and I still have the money, it's been nearly 2 years. Do I have to keep it until the end of time? Yes, I do. So that's accounting, being accountable to other people's funds. Now, what if he should die? Do I get to get the money now? No, I have to turn it over to the estate, true? So does everybody understand that confidentiality runs forever, even though the relationship is over and so does accounting? So do two fiduciary duties outlive the relationship? Good. Fiduciary relationship under implied agency. The principal agent relationship is a fiduciary relationship. That is a relationship based on trust and confidence. True? Okay. A fiduciary relationship can also be formed by the principal giving power of attorney. And whoever they give the power of attorney to is called the attorney in fact. And do you have to have a power of attorney for universal agency? Yes, anything in the world. Now, fiduciary responsibilities, you are going to see these again. And is OLCAR the acronym for the six fiduciary duties? Yes. The first one is obedience, as long as it's legal. Okay? Number two, loyalty, disclosure, confidentiality, and accountability. Now, please read those six fiduciary duties and look at all of those examples, because you're going to have two or three questions on our final exam about a little scenario, and they're going to ask you which fiduciary duty was breached or which fiduciary duty made you do that thing. So not only do you have to know the six fiduciary duties, you have to know examples of each one. Now, under accountability, commingling and conversion, there's a great deal of difference between those two. Commingling is the mixing of funds, your client's funds with your own business funds or personal funds. That's just mixing them, commingling. But if you spend that money, that's called conversion. If you use the commingled funds, then that's conversion. That's worse, true? Because you can't get it back. If you were busted for marijuana and you had a half an ounce, could they say that you are a victim and you were just in possession? Yeah, but if you're caught with a U-Haul, 800 pounds, that ain't personal use, okay? That is overkill for glaucoma, okay? So now, could you be charged with a distribution? Now, you're not a victim now, you're making victims. Does everybody see the difference? So that's the difference between commingling and conversion. Which one's worse? Conversion, exactly right. Now, we owe the customer. Now, there are two people in the deal. Haley has the house listed. So who is her client? The seller. I'm selling the house. Who's my client? The buyer. Her client is my customer, and my client is her customer. So what she owes and the owner owes my buyer are two things, honesty and truthfulness. So if there is a leaky roof, do they have to tell us that? Anything wrong with that house, they have to be truthful and honest with us. They've got to say, even if I'm buying it, waiver of retribution as is, they still have to fill out the property disclosure form and be honest. Now, if they say on there, no, the roof has never leaked, but in fact it has, and I bought it waiver of retribution, now it's out the window because they lied, true? Okay? So then, her client, she owes fiduciary duties to. My buyer, since I'm selling the home to my buyer, I owe fiduciary duties to. But my buyer, my client, is not her client, the listing agent and the seller. Then my buyer, my client, is their customer, true? And you only owe the customer two things, honesty and truthfulness, as far as the law will allow. Now, I know that sounds fishy. I have to be truthful and honest with the customer, as far as the law will allow. Now, what I mean by that is this. If you read the chapters last night, you will have read and noticed that there was an acronym in the chapter called Federal Fair Housing. And the acronym for the eight protected classes was fresh corn. Does anybody remember that? So protected class would be familial status, people with children. Race, sex is two. Age is handicapped. Color or creed, religion, and national origin. Those are the eight protected classes. So under federal fair housing laws, which is Title VIII of the 1968 Civil Rights Act, it is illegal to discriminate against someone because of familial status, that they have children, or they're pregnant, or they are acquiring the custody of a child or children. So if you have an apartment for rent, is it illegal to say I don't rent to people with children? It definitely is. Race, you may never base it upon race. Sex is two. One is gender. You may not discriminate against someone because they're male or female. And the newest one added is sexual preference or sexual orientation. Okay? You may not discriminate against someone because they're lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or questioning. So then it's lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and Q is the newest one, questioning, which you don't know which category you fall in, or one of the splinter groups that's not listed there. Does that make sense? Okay. Equal opportunity. That's the whole premise behind the Federal Fair Housing Act, is to give everybody equal opportunity to live wherever you want to live. Okay? So we have familial status, we have race, we have gender, and sexual or sexual orientation. True? Color or creed. Color does not always indicate race. Religion. If I said, I don't work with Jews, never have, never will, is that race or religion? Religion. Sammy Davis Jr. died Jewish. I could become Jewish. Okay? National origin. If I said I don't work with people from Iran, Iraq, or Afghanistan, never have, never will, then am I where you came from, true? If I said I don't work with Irish people, at one time were Irish despised and discriminated against? Yes, indeed. Down in New Orleans, I have a picture on Canal Street back in the 20s and 30s where it said, help wanted, no mix need apply. Has anybody ever heard of Hibernia Bank? That's why Hibernia Bank was started, to take deposits from Irish people, because the banks in New Orleans would not take money from Irish people. Now, you got to hate somebody a lot not to take their money, okay? That's a lot, okay? I don't understand it. So Hibernia Bank was started where Irish people would have a place in the Irish Canal, would have a place to bank, okay? Now, fresh corn. That's the acronym for the 8 protected classes under federal law. I said that you have to be honest and truthful, correct? As far as the law will allow. Now, this is important. The law will not allow you to discuss fresh corn. If Charles came to me and he said, Burke, do any blacks live in this subdivision or this apartment building, because I don't want to be the only black person in here, I cannot answer that question. The only thing I can say is I am prohibited by federal law in discussing that. If I answered even truthfully, I have facilitated the discrimination. So if you're ever asked about race, creed, color, national origin, religion, sex, handicap, or familial status, or sexual preference, the only thing you can legally say is I am prohibited by federal law in discussing that. Now, everybody's aware of service animals and comfort animals, true? Under handicap, that's physical or mental, if I rent an apartment to you or house you, I'm a housing provider, and you are handicapped and you want to make changes in that dwelling to accommodate your handicap, I have to allow you to do it at your expense to code. Inside. Anything outside, the lessor, the landlord is responsible for. If I have an apartment or a house and my policy is no pets, and Charles shows up with a service animal has to be trained to do something. A service animal is governed by the ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act. That animal can go anywhere Charles can go legally. And there are only two animals that can be a service animal, a dog or a miniature horse. That's it. What some of these animals are being trained for now are things unbelievable. The first one that we were ever accustomed to seeing was the seeing eye dog, true? That is only the tip of the iceberg now, okay? The service animal, remember, can only be a dog or miniature horse, and it's governed by the ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act. And it can go in the public, it can go in restaurants, it can go on airplanes, it can go anywhere. Now, the miniature horse was just added not long ago, a couple years ago, and the only reason they did it is not because they're cute, and they are cute, okay? But dogs, they're usually large dogs, and you have to retire them at 10, 11 years old because they only have a life expectancy of 12 to 14. So if you pay $20-something thousand, $38,000 for this dog, then you're only getting 7 or 8 years of service out of this investment. And the miniature horse lives beyond 30 years, and it can do more things. The miniature horse, the life expectancy, it costs the same, but you get 2 to 3 times the number of years of service from it. Plus, it can carry groceries for you. It can provide, if you have bad knees, support and things like that. The miniature horse and the dogs are being trained for things like this. Seeing eye, of course. Hearing impaired, of course. But now they have dogs and miniature horses that can detect seizures up to 5 to 7 minutes before you have a seizure. These dogs and horses cost, you know, $30-something thousand, and they're trying to keep most of them for children because it will change the family's life, not just the child's. They have dogs now that can detect the drop and rise in blood sugar more accurately than pricking your finger. I know. Amazing what these dogs can do. They have now dogs that are more accurate in detecting cancer than an MRI. They got a beagle in Memphis that after they do the MRI and the CAT scan and all that, then they run it by the beagle. And he's caught things that they didn't catch on the MRI. Okay? Amazing. They have a cat in Memphis that knows when people are going to die. He runs around in the hospital and he comes to your room when you're about, I'd say, get out of here, cat. I throw a mouse down the hall there, okay? That scared me that day. They have a horse in Memphis that, have y'all seen that? That just roams around the hospital and he can tell who is emotionally disturbed and he just goes in the room and nuzzles on them and, you know, things like that. It's amazing we're going to find out one of these days that animals are way smarter than we think they are, okay? When a storm would come, all of our cows, we knew 2 or 3 hours before a storm was coming because all our cows, if you're from the country, you may verify this, would line up and all go to a certain corner in the pasture like little soldiers walking, okay? Does anybody know what I'm talking about from the country? Okay. And we say, oh, hell, there's a storm coming, you know, because the cows all lined up in a straight line and just walk straight to the corner of the pasture. The things today have come so far. I can remember in 1970-something, I was standing on the corner of Main Street and Commerce in Natchez, Mississippi. And I looked across, and my back was up against this, what used to be Britt and Koontz Bank with the big columns and things. And I looked across the thing and there was a boy by the name of Pat Mulvihill. I had graduated with him and he had lost both legs in Vietnam. And he waved and I waved and I said, how you doing, Pat? And he said, I want to talk to you, Bert. So I said, all right. And he said, I've got to come over there anyway. And I stood there and watched that boy come up in the wheelchair to the corner and had to rear the legs up, put them down, and then when he went across, the back big wheels went down on that curve, and it, boom, and I remember, now he had a pillow in there, but his ass went that high because he had no weight on his legs, and it came down. Then he came across the street, and then now he's got to get up that curb on the other side, and I remember watching him come across the street, something I just took for granted. Took him 10, 15 minutes to get across the street. He had to put the little legs, little wheels up on, and then he had to turn his hands like that and jerk the back wheels up on that curb. And I said to myself, it made me feel a little uncomfortable. Damn, that was a lot just to get across the street. But I had absolutely no idea how to fix it. Well, a few years ago, I was back in Natchez, and I'm standing in the same place, and I remembered watching Pat come across the street. Now, right there, on both sides of the street, the curb is like this, and it's knocked out, and it goes down, it's painted blue. Now, he can just zip back and forth across it and not watch his ass go 3 feet in the hair, you know? But it never occurred to me how to fix it. I said, oh, that's awful. Thank God somebody, you know, figured out how to fix it. Handicapped parking spots. Did you ever have that growing up? No. Look how much things have changed over the years. A lot of us in here, we didn't even have seat belts. Your mama saved your life just like this, okay? I remember the car we got, it had a seat belt. My mother pushed those big buckles down because it hurt her butt when she sat on them. So she'd push them down in the seat. We didn't even wear them after we got them, you know? Look at all the things that changed. My mother would keep the bacon grease on the stove and keep it to cook other stuff in it in case you weren't getting enough cholesterol. I can fix that, okay? We didn't know anything. Smoke like chimneys, you know? Just mama would blow smoke in your face. Or she'd tell me to go to the store and get us some cigarettes. I'd be 12 years old, walk in and get, you know, two packs of cigarettes. They didn't care. And I'd say, give me a beer too. Okay? That's for daddy. It wasn't for daddy. Okay? They didn't care. Okay? Nothing. We didn't know what the hell was going on. Rode in the back of trucks. Just unbelievable. Look at the changes now. Your parents would paddle you, would slap you. You do that now, you go to jail. Okay? Now, do we understand what I said that was so fishy about you have to be honest and truthful with them as far as the law will allow, because the law will not allow you to talk about fresh corn. We got that? Okay. Now, what do we owe the customer? Honesty and what? Truthfulness. Now, types of agency, we've talked about some of these. Is Louisiana a designated agency state? Yes, it is. And does your broker designate you to represent that buyer or seller? Yes. Single agency is when you only represent one person in the deal, the buyer or the seller. But if you are a dual agent, do you represent both buyer and seller? Yes. Now, sub-agency. Sub-agency is common law. Louisiana is automatically designated agency. But we have to know this. You may have sub-agency in the state of Louisiana if you create it in writing. If you do not create sub-agency in writing, then you are automatically designated agency. You represent the one you're with. Now, here's what sub-agency is. And all 50 states were under this at one time. Louisiana was under sub-agency too. Sub-agency is this. Haley goes out and she lists the property. Who is her client? The seller. I come along and I sell the property. Who is my client? The buyer. Now, under sub-agency, now that's the way it is in Louisiana, true? Under designated agency. You love the one you're with. But when all 50 states, and a lot of states still are, under sub-agency. Even Louisiana was at one time. Now, here's why we did away with it. Sub-agency is where everybody represented the seller because the seller was paying the commission, we thought. So then the seller paid $6,000 to Haley's broker, 6% of 100 grand. So the seller gave Haley's broker $6,000. Then Haley's broker gave my broker $3,000 for having the buyer, true? So the law said y'all are both being paid by the seller. So you both firms, have to represent the seller because they're paying you. That's why Louisiana a few years ago added the thing, compensation does not equal representation. Because we got to thinking about it and we said, wait a minute, Where did the seller get the $6,000 to pay the commission from? Who brought it to the closing? That's right. So if you looked at it from that point of view, you could say the buyer paid the commission, and we use the seller as conduit to disperse it. Is this half full or half empty? Used to say, well, it tells if you're a pessimist or an optimist, true? You know who answered it better than anybody? Bill Cosby's mother. She said, it depends on if you're pouring or drinking. I just think it's ironic that it'd be her, like anybody drink anything from a Cosby. No, I'm not. No, Bill, I'm good. Okay, I'm not thirsty, Bill. Okay. So, some of these words, I mean, that congressman that got put away for exposing himself, Congressman Wiener, I mean, really? That just blows my mind, okay? Some of the names. The Flood Act was by Congressman Waters when they were fixing to change the, well, still coming, where you have to pay your flood insurance according to your coverage, and it's going to be open market, and you're going to pay for what you're getting instead of, because, you know, the National Flood Insurance Program is in the red by billions, with a B, billions of dollars. Billions. So they can't keep on. So every time Congress meets, they want to make people in Louisiana pay for the risk. And the last one was Congressman Waters. And I was teaching a class in home at the time for the Bayou Board. And when this was going on to see if it was going to pass, everybody thought the real estate business home was over with. Because if you had to pay $7,000 or $8,000 a year in flood insurance, instead of, you know, $700 or $800, nobody could afford a house. So the executive director of the Bayou Board kept coming into the class to tell us what the vote was, and it passed. And everybody thought it was over. But before it went into effect, they had to pass the Affordable Act. It's called the Affordable Act, which took the Waters Bigot Act and postponed putting that up in premiums for another year and a half and things like that, but it's coming back up again. So, do you know that 80% of the property that flooded in Houston and in Baton Rouge when we had it was not in the flood zone? Do you know why Houston, all that stuff flooded? Houston, like we said, whoever's from Houston, 6.5 million or 6.2 million people, things like that, they have put down so much concrete, there's no place for the water to be absorbed. It just keeps running now, because there's so much concrete there. And so that's why 80% of the property in Houston flooded wasn't even in the flood zone. Can you get flood insurance if you're not in the flood zone? Yes, you can. Is the lender going to require it if you are in the flood zone? Yes. Okay. Now, at the top of the page, sub-agency. Is that where everybody represents the seller because they thought the seller was paying the commission? So then, Haley was an agent of the seller, and my firm was a sub-agent of hers. So that meant both firms represented and owed fiduciary duties to whom? The seller. And that left the buyer as the customer. But Louisiana was the second state that said, wait a minute, the seller got the money from the buyer, so if you wanted to look at it from the other point of view, the buyer paid the commission. So we're going to put that five-word thing in, and it's going to change the world. Compensation does not equal representation. So I now, in Louisiana, represent the seller, the buyer, and Haley represents the seller, true? And we're both being paid by the seller, but it's okay, the buyer brought it. So that's sub-agency. Now this is something you got to know for the final exam. Can you have sub-agency in the state of Louisiana? Only if created how? If you don't, it's automatically designated agency. Disclosure of agency relationships, they don't care who you represent. They don't care if you represent the buyer. They don't care if you represent the seller. They don't care if you represent both. They just want you to disclose it. Okay? Designated agency, that's what Louisiana is. Dual agency, everybody's got a sign, true, to give you permission. Undisclosed dual agency is illegal. Disclosed dual agency is fine. Now, if you are a dual agent, those are the things that you must do. One, treat all clients honestly. Now, is the dual agency like getting a divorce with one attorney? Okay. Provide information about the property to the buyer or the tenant. Disclose all latent material defects in the property that are known to the licensee. Disclose financial qualifications of the buyer or tenant to the seller or landlord. That's the only time you can tell financial information about your client is in a dual agency. Explain real estate terms. Help the buyer or tenant to arrange for property inspection. Explain closing costs and procedures. Help the buyer compare financing alternatives. And we said this earlier. Provide information about comparable properties that have sold so both clients may make educated decisions on what price to accept or offer. So do I have to show the buyer comps and the seller comps as a dual agent? Yes. A licensee must not disclose confidential information that a licensee may know about either client without permission. You must not disclose the price or terms the seller or landlord will take other than the listed price without permission of the seller or landlord. You must not disclose the price or terms the buyer is willing to pay. Now, termination of agency. Will death or incapacity of either party terminate a relationship? Yes. Okay. Destruction of the property. Now, we're going to cover this in another chapter, but let me run it back quickly. Destruction or condemnation, and in parentheses, it has expropriation. Does everybody see that? Okay. Of the property. Condemnation, what we call that in Louisiana, is expropriation. Would everybody agree that the government, state, local, or federal, and some quasi-governmental agencies, has the right to come in and take private property for public use after paying you just compensation and proving it's for a public need? So if they came to your house today and said, we're fixing to put a four lane right down through the middle of your property, is there anything you can do about it? Not really. That is called the government's right. The government's right. The government's right to take private property for public use is called eminent domain. And that's the term for it in all 50 states. But when they literally do it, the action of doing it, the process of doing it, the procedure of actually doing it is called condemnation in the other 49 states. And it's called expropriation in Louisiana. Now, if you represent both buyer and seller in the same transaction, you are a dual agent, true? If you represent both buyer and seller in the same transaction, you are in a dual agency, true? Does one word change the answer? Okay, well, let's do it again. The difference between eminent domain and condemnation, one is a right and one is a process, true? Change that one word and you got a completely different answer. The right of government, and they're going to put a lot of verbiage in there so you forget the second word. The right of government to take private property for public use after paying just compensation and proving for a public need is? That's correct. The right to do it. Okay? The power to do it is what? Eminent domain also. The right or power is eminent domain. But they take that same sentence or question and say this. The process of taking private property for public use after paying just compensation and proving for a public need is what? That's right. And on the Louisiana portion, it would be? So again, change one word and you got a completely different answer. Y'all with me? Okay. Disclosure. Expiration of the terms of the agency. Mutual agreement will do most anything, true? Renunciation by the agent, revocation by the principal. All those $13 words means is this. If you hold something, like a driver's license, and you give it back, you say, look, I've driven on Esten Lane or College Drive. I never want to drive again. Here's my license. You're renouncing that privilege. But if they sent you a letter and they say, we've seen you drive, and we don't want you driving with the rest of us, that's revocation. If the giver of the privilege takes it, it's revoke. If you give it back, it's renouncing. Bankruptcy of the principal will terminate a relationship. This is the most common, is the one we forget about most often. Fulfillment of the purpose, that terminates it also. I have Charles's house listed, and I sell it. Does that terminate our relationship? Yes, but do I still owe him two fiduciary duties to the end of time? Confidentiality and what? Accounting. Good. Disclosure of material facts and defects. Do you have to disclose any known material defects that you have knowledge of concerning that property? Yes. The common law doctrine of caveat impetor, or caveat impetor, however how you want to say it, either Caribbean, Caribbean, potato, patata, I don't know. Okay. The common law doctrine, so that means Louisiana does not have it, true? Caveat impetor means let the buyer beware. Louisiana does not have it. In the state of Louisiana, if you're selling a piece of property, are you, as the seller, promising that you will stand good for anything wrong with that property from the day you close for 1 year or 1 year from the discovery of the defect, whichever occurs first, unless you buy it, waiver of redhibition, true? Okay. Megan's Law. Is Megan's Law a state law, parish law, or federal law? It's a federal law. Is a federal law which established a statewide registry containing the information on sex offenders. That has to be, that website has to be in every purchase agreement and lease. And it is in the purchase agreement that you printed out from the website. When you put the address of the house in, there will be a map will pop up. Has anybody ever been to that website? Okay. Does anybody own that website? Okay. Don't raise your hand. Okay. Little map will pop up. You click on the map and it'll tell you what the person's done. Sometimes the kind of car they drive, things like that. That website is a federal requirement because of Megan's Law. Now, if you've been to that website, there are a lot of people on that website. When they pop up, it's a little scary. I live in pervert estates, okay? It's a little scary, but I'm not belittling this at all, but there are some people on that site that I don't think should be there, okay? To me, it's not a sexual predator, okay? I had a lady come to me and ask me if her son could get a real estate license. I said, sure, if he's got a high school diploma and 18. She said, well, he's a registered sex offender. When she said that, I thought of rapist, killer. I mean, I just thought of the most horrible thing. What this young man did is out at an LSU football game, he was drunk and peed on the side of a camper because all the little blue things were full. And a woman turned him in, state trooper arrested him. And now he's got to register for indecent exposure and things like that for 10 years. I know that, but for the grace of God, there go I. You know, I mean, that's just unreal. And so I'm not protecting in any way. I mean, some people should be on there, but, you know, some of them shouldn't. But this is a federal law that takes liability away from us as agents, morally and legally. Because if you had a piece of property listed and you knew a sex offender lived down the street, if you told the buyers about it, did you hurt your client, the seller? Yes. So we were between a rock and a hard place. So the federal law relieved us from this. Now we just say, if this is any concern to you, go to that website and put this address in, and now I have no liability. It's all on them. Okay. Now, we talked about this yesterday, the open listing, exclusive agency, and exclusive right to sell, the three types of listing agreements, true? Which one do you get paid no matter what? Exclusive right to sell. Look at you, Charles. Did you study last night or something?
A little bit.
Okay, good. Buyer's agency. Those are the three that you can have with the buyer. They're exactly the same thing that you have with the seller. exclusive buyer-agent agreement. The buyer engages a single licensee to search for a suitable property, and the licensee is entitled to compensation no matter which house he buys and who finds it for him. So that's number one there is the same as number three listing. Number two, exclusive agency buyer-agency agreement. The way I remember it has the word agency in there twice. So that's the kind you have with the builder, where the builder can sell it or any real estate agent can sell it, so you could have two relationships. So number two, the buyer engages the licensee to search for a suitable property, and that licensee is entitled to compensation. Anyone other than the buyer finds the suitable property. So the buyer could still find it on his own, true, just like the builder can sell his own. And then open, you only get paid if you find the house. Procuring cause. The best I've ever heard procuring cause described was by an old judge in Hamburg, Arkansas, about 30-something years ago. And you might have to be a little country to appreciate it. The judge said it's not who picked up the pecans that the pecans belong to. It's who thrashed the tree. And that's about what it is. When several brokers become involved in a sale, there's sometimes a question as to which of them has found the buyer. That is, has been the procuring cause of the sale. What that means is if you started a chain of events that resulted in that sale, you could be entitled to the commission even though you didn't get them to sign the contract. Let's say that I show the house twice to Charles. And then, 2 or 3 weeks later, Charles goes to his cousin who got a real estate license and they write up the purchase agreement together. Who started that chain of events that resulted in that sale? I did. So I could claim procuring cause. Your job is to find a ready, willing, and able buyer. That's when you have earned your commission. Because there's really nothing else you... We do a lot of stuff after that to hurry it along. But there's nothing else you can do after you furnish a ready, willing, and able buyer on the seller's terms. You've earned your commission at that point. If the seller decided not to sell, you could still sue for your commission. He doesn't have to sell, but did you do your job? Yes. Commissions. No one sets a real estate commission. Every real estate commission is negotiable. To say that there is a standard commission in real estate, that in itself is a violation of the Sherman Antitrust Act, which keeps monopolies and restraint of trade at bay. There is no standard commission. The commission always comes off of the final sold price. For two competitors to discuss commission, the setting of commission, high or low, is against the law. If you're sitting at the table and two competitors sitting there talking about setting commission, saying they're saying, you know, gas has gone up, everything's gone up, we've been at 6% forever. Let's just start charging 7%. You have to get up and leave that table, or you're just as guilty as they are. Your silence will not protect you, okay? The commission is discussed in the same firm, then there is no violation. If we were all in the same firm, ABC Realty, and let's just start discussing commissions. You know, anything outside the parish, I want us to charge 7%. Everything in the parish, 6%. If you go to Port Allen, 7%, all of that. Did we break a law? No, because we're all one firm. We're not doing it with the competitors, true? Okay. Presentation of offers. Now, you're going to see that again. Every offer that comes into your possession, you must submit to your client immediately without delay, and there's no reason not to. There are no exceptions to that law. None. I teach it like this because people always remember it. If I write the offer on the side of a cow, your job is to herd the cow on over there. So do you have to present all offers that come to your possession, regardless, immediately, without delay? Yes. Does the broker have to keep all rejected offers for a period of 5 years in Louisiana? Yes. Even accepted offers, true, for 5 years, okay? Misrepresentation, we talked about yesterday, that's me telling you something wrong and didn't mean to. If I told you something was wrong and I meant to, then that's fraud. Also in that paragraph, you see the word puffing. Is exaggerating a property's benefits such as views or landscaping. I'm showing you 3 acres on the side of the mountain. And I said, this is the prettiest view in the world. It is to me. But if you got vertigo or something, that might not be the prettiest view in the world for you, okay? We're at the beach, and I said, this is the prettiest view in the world. But if you almost drowned 3 times as a kid, that may not be for you. So is puffing an exaggeration? And there are 2 things that are always puffing, views and landscaping. People say, this is the best landscaping in the neighborhood. What is the best landscaping or the best view? First of all, I have not seen all views in the world, true? Second, it's subjective as a matter of opinion. Landscaping. My wife, she likes stuff to weed eat around. I don't, okay? I'd just soon a damn yard be concreted and painted green, okay? That helped me. And sometimes I'll be drinking and run over some of them things, okay? I don't have to, oh my God, my bad, okay? Don't have to weed eat around that one anymore, okay? At the bottom, disclosure of environmental hazards. Encapsulation, you better take a look at that word. That's going to be the answer to something. They love that word. Encapsulation of asbestos is often safer than removal. Radon, that is a colorless, odorless, radioactive gas. You know the gas that comes out of your stove? It's odorless too, but can you smell it? That's because they put something in it where when grandma leaves the stove on, y'all can smell it where you won't light a match and blow up the house. But it's odorless too, but if they didn't put that odor in it, you'd never know the gas was still on. Encapsulation is enclosing it. Radon is colorless, odorless, radioactive. Now it's everywhere, but we don't have a real problem with it because it can't get out of our gumbo soil. But in places where they have basements, sandy soils, rocky areas, it gets out. And the only thing you can do is put a radon testing kit in there and vent it, a little fan, and keep venting it out and things like that. Lead-based paint. Now, most of us in here, again, we grew up with lead-based paint. They banned it in 1978. So any house built before 1978, you have to give a lead-based paint brochure. And all that brochure is saying, the likelihood of lead-based paint is great in this house. Do you have a problem with it? And the buyer signs off saying, I'm aware of it, let's move on. The seller is not promising to pay hospital bills. He's not promising to remove the lead-based paint and all that. The lead-based paint, it's not that your child has eaten up 3 window seals. If your child has eaten up 3 window seals, you got a bigger problem than lead-based paint, okay? You got a damn beaver on your hand, you know? So you got to put a muzzle on that kid, huh? It's not that. It's when you sand it and it becomes airborne and then you breathe it, it doesn't take much. Now again, how ignorant we were growing up when Lisa and I bought our first house on Dreer. Still got it, 1415 Dreer. It was built in 1920, and when we bought it in 71 or whatever, 70-something, I don't know what, it had probably 15 layers of paint on the windows. And I can remember us standing there, we didn't have any money, and we were sanding these windows at night. And I remember asking her, and we'd sand, it's just everywhere, and I'd say, what color are you on? Because there are like 15 colors. I mean, there was a green, there was a beige, there was a maroon, it's just all kinds of colors. And she'd tell me, we'd just, oh my God, you know, just say, dust everywhere. I'm holding a drink in this hand, a cigarette in this hand, you know, and no mask, just breathing this. And I wonder what's wrong with me, okay? All that damn lead-based paint, okay? We didn't have a clue about it. We didn't have a clue about anything. Do y'all remember the mosquito truck, the fogging machine? It would come by out in the country and had white boiling smoke to come down. What'd y'all do with that? You played in it. I did. Everybody in the neighborhood, we rode our bikes behind the damn fogging machine as far as we could. You couldn't see your hand. No matter, a truck could run over you. That stuff was pure DDT. And no adult ever said, get out of the poison. And I can remember following that thing. That's stupid. Now, but we didn't have a clue then. I was 27 before a mosquito bit me. It'd land on me and just fall off. Pure DDT. We should have known something. I mean, damn birds falling out of the air, you know? Kill the lightning bugs, mosquitoes. When you were growing up, do you ever remember anybody having a peanut allergy? We lived on peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. I just don't understand how it came such a wreck. Maybe somebody, we thought, you know, Jimmy moved. Where's Jimmy? Oh, he must have moved to Macomb. Okay. No, he ate a damn peanut and died. We just didn't know about it, okay? It wasn't on TV or nothing. He just never got back on the bus. So everybody assumed he moved. Okay. I don't know. We didn't have stuff like that.
Huh?
Yeah.
I don't even drink old milk no more.
Do you want me to tell you something interesting I learned a few months ago? My daughter's very good friend is a physician here, and Amy wanted to become, she's now head of Ochsner's Hospital, a whole bunch of it. brilliant girl. And Anna handles all her legal affairs for her and stuff like that. And so she told Anna that she wanted to become an allergist, which if you're a doctor, you have to go take these extra courses to do with allergy and stuff like that. What? You here for the Tupperware party? Okay. Yeah, that's right. And so Anna told me, Amy was taking, I didn't know you had to take these courses. And I said, well, you know, I teach a lot about mold and stuff like that. Would you ask Amy if I could sit in, you know, for it's like a 3-day course, a day or so. And so these physicians were teaching the course, and they let me sit in. I was the only person there that wasn't a physician. And I learned this, and I almost fell out of my chair. Do you know there's no such thing as toxic mold? You are either allergic to it or you're not. There's no toxic mold. I thought there was some of that black mold after Katrina and things like that. I thought, hell, that's toxic there. You can see it looking at you like, I'm going to get you. And it's not. There are so many different types of mold spores, thousands and thousands, that if we walked in this room and it had mold in it, it wouldn't bother me at all, and it might bother Haley. Go to the next room, and it would bother me and not bother her. So it's not toxic. It's just if you're allergic to it or not, okay? And so I really thought there was toxic mold, but there's not. But there's so many different kinds, you're allergic to some of them, you know? So Everything is changing. I mean, we never thought about mold. We never thought about the fogging machine. We didn't think about bacon grease. We didn't think about drinking water out of the water hose, you know, that vinyl. How many people drink this? If you leave it in your car and it gets hot, that plastic's going to get into the water. You ought to throw it away or take it with you, things like that. I keep filling up the same thing because I can hear my mother now turning in her grave if she knew that I spent a dollar and something for a bottle of water. And I can hear exactly what she said. Evidently, you got more money and you got sense, okay, buying water. Who in hell would ever thought we'd be doing that, okay? But I like that Fiji water. I love the bottle. Do you see where the Japanese guy got an iceberg and took it all the way down to Japan and bottled it? $10 a bottle. It's supposed to be the purest water in the world, okay? Also, Ozark City, what is that up there in the little mountain town? Whatever it was, 60 Minutes caught one of those people, followed him home and filmed him from the woods, and he was taking all the bottles called Ozark water or something and filled them up with his water hose, and he had a little machine. He put the top back on, take them back down to Ozark City and sell the hell out of them, okay? The farther away the water comes, the more people like it. When I was in France, you know what people were walking around with? Kentwood water. Oh, the French people were. Yeah, they brought it all. Oh, yeah. And everybody here walking around with Avion water, okay? The farther away it comes, the better we like it, okay? Just get it out of your water hose. Who cares? Now, lead-based paint. Do you have to tell every buyer that the house was built before 1978 and they have to sign off on the lead-based paint brochure? Yes. And all they're saying is they have knowledge of it and ready to move on. Asbestos is a naturally occurring material that was once widely used in building materials because it's fire resistant and has some insulating properties. Abatement is the method by which the environmental hazard is reduced. So if you put a vent in your basement, is that abatement?
Yes.
Okay. Now, summary of disclosures. Now, do you have to disclose wetlands too, even though it's not a hazard? Yes. Okay. Summary of disclosures. What you must disclose, material defects. True. Dual agency. Agent has an ownership interest in the property. If you're selling your own house and you own any part of it, do you have to disclose that before you enter into the contract and put it in the contract? Yes. And if you are an agent, do you also have to put in the contract that you are a licensed agent? Yes. Environmental hazards, website for listed sex offenders, website for mold disclosure, must present the Louisiana Buyer Informational Brochure at the first substantive contact. Must not disclose confidential information unless permission is given by the client. The information becomes public knowledge by another source. Anything related to the protected classes, federal fair housing, cannot be disclosed. It cannot be discussed. Fresh corn. Not required to disclose psychological impacted property such as murder, suicide, or any felony, or the house is haunted. So if you are selling a piece of property where a murder has occurred or a suicide, the reason they list those separately is this. Is suicide illegal? Not at all. I mean, what are they going to do to you? That's right. We're going to lock your dead ass up now, okay? That's why. Now, attempted suicide is illegal, okay? But suicide is not. If you are successful, I promise you, no charges will be filed, okay? Now, any house that has any felonies, murder, suicide, or ghost are not material defects. A material defect will affect everyone the same way, but psychological will not. How many people in here would buy a house where somebody died in it? Nobody would. Prior to 1972, most people died at home. They didn't keep them alive on support. Ain't nothing we can do for them. Take them home, make them comfortable. That's where most people died prior to 1974, I think. Anybody have a four-poster antique bed? You know somebody died in that sucker. Sleep well tonight, okay? You know, if you didn't build your house, you don't know if somebody died in it or not. If you have a house that is psychologically impacted, you do not have to disclose that. That's not a material defect. If you had a house where somebody died peacefully, it wouldn't bother me at all. But it might bother somebody else. That's why it's psychological. It depends on the person. It affects everybody differently. If you have a house where you know somebody died in, I promise you, the buyer's going to find out after they move in. My advice, and it's advice only, I would disclose it. Because Ms. Jones, across the street, the day the buyer moves in, this witch is going to dodge traffic to get across there to tell them all about it, okay? And then they're going to say, I wonder what else that no good real estate agent didn't tell me, okay? But you do not have to disclose it. Now, this is important. At the end of the chapter, we have forms. The first form is called the Customer Information Pamphlet. Now, we're almost finished with this chapter, but everything I'm fixing to tell you now, we've got to know. Does everybody see the Customer Information Form? 25. The Customer Information Form must be given to everyone that you come into contact with when the conversation becomes substantive, which means it has substance when you're serious. You have to sign it, they have to sign it, and you have to keep it for 5 years. And all this form does is it explains how agency works. if they refuse to sign this form, you may still work with them. If you give them a copy of it and keep the form that you wrote on why they would not sign it. I've only had one person refuse to sign this form. I was showing her house on Highland Road a few years ago, and she said, I'm sorry, I just can't sign the form. Most of the time when I point to it and it says, this does not, it's not a contract, it doesn't obligate anybody to anything, it's just proven I gave you this form, most people will sign it. But she said she couldn't. I said, well, just tell me why where I can write it down. She said, because when I left the house this morning, my husband told me if I signed anything, he would kill me. Okay? And I said, okay, I understand. So I said, by threat of spouse upon death, will not sign. And I don't blame her. Okay? So this form does not obligate anybody to anything. True? It just explains how agency works. And how long do you have to keep it? 5 years. And when do you have to whip out this form? When the conversation becomes substantive. When it has substance.
So if they don't sign it, you still need to put the reason why and keep it.
That's right. That, and still give them a copy of it. Now, on 26 and 27 here, that's the same form, but it's 2 pages long. The 2-page form can be used, or the customer information form. Either form can be used. The first one was put out by the Real Estate Commission. It's simpler. This one was put out by legislature. We use the first one, 1 page. Or you can use the trifold 2-page. Either one. Now the next and last form is the dual agency form. The dual agency form must be signed by the buyer and the seller before you act as a dual agent. Now if one of them refuses to sign that, you can't be a dual agent, true? Okay. Now, do they both have to sign the same sheet of paper, or could they sign 2 different forms? They can sign 2 different forms. When I go out and list the house, could I get the seller to sign this dual agency form, and then I file it away? Now, do I have permission to be a dual agent? Yes. Now, before I show the house to the buyer, could I have the buyer sign another form just like this? Yeah. Now, do I have permission from the buyer to be a dual agent? But they're not on the same form, true? They're on 2 different forms that are alike. That's fine. And the third time I show the house?
You wouldn't be having a problem with your AC.
I don't think so. We got our air conditioner man in here. Okay. Who called you? I can tell you where they are. No, just go ahead. That's all right. So then, they don't have to be on the same form, okay? Now, this chapter we just talked about, agency. People, there are a lot of, that's a lot of information in that chapter, but page-wise, it's sort of short, okay?